you make arguments like this, or when others such as the Field Sisters or Adolf Reed or Remy Adekoya, who we've just interviewed, argue that racism needs to be thought of not as this metaphysical evil, not as this thing that is kind of inherent to groups of different ethnicities interacting with each other, but rather as a political and economic fact that can be negotiated and can be changed. You often get accused, or people who make these kind of arguments get accused of minimizing racism. Don't you realize everyone's on Instagram saying that they believe in racism? You choose now to offer this kind of academic scrutiny of anti-racism. Maybe you could say something about what you start the book with, your recollections of the racism in Britain when you were young, and also the experience of anti-racism that you had in those kind of formative years.
Well, I grew up in a very different Britain to the Britain of today. It was when racism was vicious and visceral and woven into the fabric of society in a way that it is difficult to imagine in Britain now. Stabbings were common, firebombings were common. By the end of my teens, I was organising street patrols to protect Asian families from racist attacks. And Britain is a very different place today. It's not that racism has disappeared, but that kind of in-your-face racism is thankfully much rarer. And public attitudes have shifted enormously. When the first British Social Attitude Survey was published in 1983, I think it was, more than half the black population would not countenance a spouse of a different race. Now, by 2020, 9 out of 10 Britons were happy to marry someone, or for their child to marry someone of another racial or ethnic group. And just 3%, if I remember right, thought someone had to be white to be truly British. So the kinds of views that were deeply embedded in the 1980s have largely become marginalised. And it's a huge change that I think we don't acknowledge often enough. And there are many reasons for that change. I mean, the struggles of minority communities themselves and anti-racism struggles, the generational changes, a changing view of what it is to be British and so on. But at the same time, if racism is very different now than it was 30, 40 years ago, so is anti-racism. I mean, I grew up at a time when anti-racism was much more expansive, and anti-racists saw themselves as closely linked to working class struggles. I mean, many of the struggles in minority communities were largely political, not religious or cultural struggles against racial attacks, police brutality, discrimination in the workplace, deportations, and so on. And the main organizations in Asian communities, for instance, were again political, not cultural or religious. The Indian Workers Association, the Asian Youth Movements, and so on. And the Asian Youth Movements are quite interesting because they emerged in the late 1970s out of the ferment of struggle from within Black and Asian communities, at the same time as groups such as the Southall Black Sisters or the Black Panthers at the Race Today Collective, and a broader organisation such as the Anti-Nazi League, Rock Against Racism, and so on. And when the Asian youth movements called themselves Asian, it wasn't so much wasn't to distinguish themselves from African Caribbeans as it would be today, yeah. But to signal a conscious break from the sectarian politics of subcontinental politics. In fact, we saw ourselves as black. I mean, I saw myself as black. I was seen as black because black was a political label, not an ethnic label. People would laugh at me if I said I was black today. But in the 80s, that was how we saw ourselves and how we were seen. because those who we now distinguish as Black and Asian were trying to forge a more inclusive identity, if you like, rooted not in ethnicity, but in politics, while also trying to highlight the divisive character of racism. So yes, race, the idea of racism has changed hugely, and the character of racism has changed hugely, but so has the character and nature of anti-racism too.